a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Half them up by Wilmot. I'm joined here by a good friend of mine, Representative Bernie Hunoff from down in the Yankton country. We're here to start off, obviously, embark on our weekend, but we close off what would be about the sixth week here for the legislative session out in Pierre. And obviously, being in the super minority and being caucus leaders, Representative Hunoff and myself, we do appreciate the tone that continues to be a guiding principle here for this legislative session, to work with our friends on the Republican side of the aisle. And many of us realize that most legislation doesn't necessarily have a particular partisan influence, but it does certainly have either a geographic or a personal influence for various legislators. There's 105 of us that come from very diverse backgrounds, and so as we are at this stage of the process looking at crossover day next week, I think many of us are realistic of the fact that that most legislation should transcend party lines. At the end of the day, we still see that there will be those partisan debates, but I know from my standpoint, I appreciate the ability to keep our discussion to policy and yet still be able to enjoy the personal friendships that we are able to enjoy with the people that are out here to make the process work in Pierre. I'll just address a little bit on a few things of where we're at right now on the Senate side, and specifically we look forward to the wind industry bill that will come to us on the Senate floor. It was amended yesterday in committee, and I'll admit, even from my standpoint, I have to fully immerse myself in the legislation. There was a hog house that was put on yesterday, and that'll give me a chance to do a little more reading and figure out where things stand. I think I would first off say I applaud the wind industry for coming to the table with not only a very favorable approach that looks at how they can provide more equity on the, especially the gross receipts tax that they pay, which not only goes to the state, but also our local governments, but along with finding ways how they can try to be more competitive here in South Dakota with other states, especially our surrounding states who have equal opportunities on wind development. And so not only given some benefits on the front end, but also being able to make sure that any sort of, you could say, tax forgiveness is tightened up a little bit and not stretched out so long. So that way the folks, especially in these local communities, can see more of a benefit in the near term instead of waiting for the long term. Representative Hunoff will address many more issues even in addition to the wind industry. But again, I know this has been a nonpartisan piece of legislation. Certainly give credit to Representative Parsley along with Senator Roden for bringing that bill forward on behalf of the wind industry, and we'll certainly look forward to that discussion. It'll be next week on the Senate floor, as it has been amended very extensively, and so it will not come up today on the Senate floor. I also want to just address from the standpoint, it almost seems like we have been at a point in time where in this legislative session, as I mentioned earlier, bills transcend party lines. We do see an element of rural and urban taking shape, and obviously some of that evidence was even in some of the teen driving bills that are very much well intended, and I'm glad to have supported some of those, but opposed others in that teen driving task force that did some very good work. But there's other examples that we can look at where, especially even on the property tax side of things, we know that in agriculture we've been experiencing some very good times, but at the same time we have to make sure that we maintain some very good equity as far as the property taxes that are paid to not only fund the schools, but obviously are extremely important for local government. So I'm hoping that we can find where there is more common ground on the rural and urban issues. Many of us realize our regional areas, you could say regional centers, especially, for example, in Aberdeen, Watertown, Brookings, that I see in my backyard, they are extremely important to our rural communities, but at the same time, the rural communities make those regional centers work. And so we are in this together. It is not a Sioux Falls versus the rest of the state by any means, but I think it's something that we need to be realistic of the fact that you know, rural South Dakota does matter, and they obviously want to be heard. And a prime example of that was, you know, a piece of legislation that came through from the big schools, not liking the fact that the small schools still can get a small school factor on open enroll students who come out of a big school district. And I'm proud to say we did stop that legislation in Senate State Affairs, but it certainly was on the mind of many of us when we looked at that legislation when that come forth. And it's a bill that has been here multiple years. With that, I know that the Senate Appropriations Committee has, as Chairman Peters mentioned, I think somewhere in the neighborhood of 24 bills, and I have looked through a number of those, and our Senate appropriators, Senator Sutton and Senator Jones, I know will be very much involved in that process next Tuesday when they have all of those bills up for discussion. So I certainly welcome the public to take an active role and be very much engaged in those discussions, especially over the weekend with the Senate Appropriations Committee members, because it certainly would be the most fair for those folks to have a discussion with those members on these bills that range anywhere from sales taxes on youth rodeo events to obviously some education funding bills that are in there. So it's very much a wide range of topics, and it's only fair for those folks that are on the committee to have that discussion and dialogue with the folks that are not only in their district but across the state. So with that, Representative Hunoff has a few more issues that he'll share with you, and I know that both of us look forward to the questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Jason. I want to begin by saying it's been a really big week for me personally in the legislature, because as Senator Frerichs indicated, we have four caucuses out here, House and Senate, Democrat and Republican, and there's also a cowboy caucus, kind of a rural young cowboy caucus. Members of both parties belong to it, and Wednesday night I was very honored to be inducted into the cowboy caucus, only on an associate basis. I only have a borrowed hat. I can't find my boots, and I don't have any cattle or horses. So I think I'm only an associate member. Is that right, Senator?
I'd gladly loan you some cattle, and especially a horse.
So several people have offered me horses and goats, but I've declined, so I'm still an associate member, I guess. And I also don't stay out late at night. They often meet about midnight, and I'm seldom out that late. But I'm proud to be an associate member, and I want to thank you, sir, for
glad to have you on board.
Sign of the bipartisan spirit out here that they would let a Yankton City Slicker join the cowboy caucus. So. Seriously, 6 weeks are gone, 3 weeks to go, and I guess the one point I want to make, and Senator Frerichs touched on it already when he talked about wind development, is that I think we're just making amazing progress in economic development. And I've got a whole list. I started making a list of all the different accomplishments I think we've already had or near accomplishments, things that I think are going to happen. I mean, right off the bat, right out of the chute, as a cowboy caucus would say, right out of the chute, we passed the tourism tax, something that had been controversial in other years. This year moved right through in a very much a bipartisan way. The industry was fully behind it, and the legislature, both sides of the aisle, moved it right on through. Education, I think we're making good progress in education, which, again, we all agree is the top economic development initiative, especially in terms of scholarships, workforce development programs on the VOTEC schools. We're providing some incentives for attorneys who go to school at our university and maybe are more inclined now to move off to the bigger cities and the bigger practices, which we're bringing incentives to bring them back to smaller cities in South Dakota, just as we've done with medical professionals, and we're moving some of those initiatives forward again this year. So education has been wonderful bipartisan support. Again, scholarships are something that, like the tourism bill in the past, have been ridiculously controversial in past years. This year we're seeing really good support on them. I really appreciate what Senator Olson is doing on the Senate side with a lot of support from other folks to create some kind of a need-based scholarship. That's critically important, I think, for workforce development. Senator Frerichs mentioned wind development. I don't know if we have the final bill written yet, but there's certainly broad support for some kind of wind incentives, and it's appropriately so. We won't have a wind energy industry in South Dakota if we don't provide competitive incentives with other states. And there's such a clear payback. The wind industry pays a 4% gross receipts tax, so there's pretty clearly a payback to the state. So I think that's something we're going to agree on. Related to tourism, I'm really encouraged to see that we're making some investments in outdoor recreation. Specifically, we're creating a first state park, first new state park in South Dakota in, 50 or 60 years at Blood Run or whatever we end up calling it. That's a big initiative. The new visitor center at Custer State Park and some other investments in outdoor recreation, I think, are overdue and very much welcomed. In rural development, something that often, I think, and peculiarly gets overlooked many times. We talked about large projects and incentives, which usually end up in the bigger cities. We don't spend enough time talking about smaller projects and rural economic development projects. Representative Munsterman and Representative Werner are in both from bigger cities, from Brookings and Huron, much to their credit, are bringing a bill that has a lot of really laudable elements to it. It would affect all size projects. It would provide local buy-in. There's lots of things we like about that bill. I have some concerns about the funding sources, but we'll continue to work on that. Housing is another thing. Senator Brown has really taken the lead on that on the Senate side, I believe. But Senator Brown wants to create some sort of a housing opportunity fund that would partner with local housing projects. You can provide all the jobs you want, but if there's no workforce or if the workforce can't find a house to live in, you're not doing any economic development. And Senator Brown has really taken the lead, and I'm hopeful that we can, you know, find some funding for that. The large projects incentive funds, not necessarily my number one project priority, but it is for others, and I fully appreciate that. So I hope we can find some resolution on the large projects incentive funds, which have been somewhat controversial out here in past years. So I'm really encouraged by all the things that we've already found common ground on. I'm hoping in these last 3 weeks that we can, you know, find some more, and I really am confident that we can. With that, I think we'll close her up and be happy to take any questions.
Again, if there's any questions from the phone people, just press #6 to unmute your line and *6 to mute your line again.
There we go. Victoria Wicks with South Dakota Public Broadcasting. A few weeks ago, Bob Mercer wrote a column saying that the legislature doesn't seem to be looking at mitigation for climate change. And he referred to a site online that shows what each section of the country is seeing now and can continue to see. And what I saw for the Great Plains, which is where we are, is that we will continue to lose soil moisture, native species will move out, other species will move in, and then, you know, there's pine beetle and wildfires, which I have seen some bills for. But there's competing interests for resources, and the Oglala Aquifer right now is being drained faster than it's being recharged, and, you know, in the Black Hills we have a huge drought with aquifers probably not being recharged. This recent snow might do something. But when you look at projects like mining at Edgemont, uranium mining at Edgemont, and the refinery in the southeast part of the state, which will use millions and millions and millions of gallons of water on a continuing basis, do you look at whether or not South Dakota can support that kind of water use in light of a warming climate, and whether or not it's going to take water away from what we have now, which is agriculture and tourism and that kind of thing? Thank you.
Well, thank you, Victoria, and obviously it's a very complex issue, but I appreciate bringing it to light. And I'll first off start, I'm sure most of the folks heard the question, but the way I understand it basically is the relationship between the availability of water for our current needs, but also future needs as far as development. And if you look at specifically on the possible uranium project that that may be put in at Edgemont, we had a few bills that came into the Senate Agriculture Committee, and none of those passed. But I think that brought to light a discussion and a question that I had for the attorney for those folks. I mean, if they even envision any type of development around uranium mining, especially the in situ form that they plan to perform out there, which would be much different than the open pit mining that those of us that have been through and toured that site can see what is left from old uranium mining. You know, in the question from the folks that brought that, they said that they, you know, they didn't quite give a direct answer, but their take was basically they didn't like to see any type of this in situ uranium mining happen, and that was basically their intent with one of the water bills that. They're one of the bills that specifically focused on water quality and water use. The question even in that instance, as we discovered in committee or kept looking at, is, you know, do they take a poorer quality water that they're using for the process, and do they have to use some of the better quality stuff to clean things up when they're all done? And obviously that goes back to a clear water use permit. Those of us that are involved in the agriculture irrigation side of things. In our farm, we run four different irrigation pivots with two different wells, and I have a separate irrigation permit that's under development yet. But anybody who receives those permits, like, for example, my dad had the first one in 1976, he has much higher priority than I do with the one that is relatively new from 2008, I believe. And so that's the question that I think many of us, that's a reassurance that many of us should have as far as new development on any type of water use. Those who are first to the table basically are the highest priority, and those who are last to the basically to the game will be the first to be turned off. And so that's a pretty well understood water right law that we see out there. And so as far as any type of biodiversity and agriculture involvement, it goes back to the question of, just as I mentioned earlier, on the rural and urban, I think many of us, especially those of us who are working the land, we need to ask ourselves, you know, what is our ultimate calling and why are we here? And we look at our communities and we look at, you know, what we want to see for the future for our offspring. And, you know, I know from my standpoint, obviously we want to be economically viable because it takes that ability. But we also need to have something that's very much sustainable, and that sustainability word gets used in a number of ways and kind of becomes a political football, but it certainly is in the eye of the beholder. And we look at right now, as far as agriculture is involved, yes, we are a heavily corn, soybean type of environment for agriculture crop production, but should something, and I look forward to the day when a particular crop comes along that not only provides us even more advancements on the feed side, which we have known, but also a crop that continues to maintain the fuel. But then don't forget about the other side of things, whether it's pharmaceutical things we've been able to utilize, and any other type of resources. You know, that's what we have here in South Dakota for agriculture land. So specifically to answer your question, I'm not as worried about these new developments impacting our current ability to do business as usual here in South Dakota. Yes, we can't bring any more water into this state, but in terms of a clear water rights, we have very sound law, and I'm proud of that. I also will say, in an example of those Senate appropriation bills that some of us sent there, especially from the Ag Committee, one of those is dealing with research at SDSU at the Ag Experiment Station. You know, they've been severely underfunded from the standpoint that we don't hardly even have researchers that are nationally known, even here at our land-grant university in South Dakota, in the heart of agriculture production in the United States. And so we have a lot of work to do there, and I think they're asking for about $6 million in this piece of legislation. I believe Representative Munsterman is probably the House prime, or at least he has a strong influence in that and is heavily involved, along with Senator Krebs, who is the Senate prime in that legislation. So I really hope that the Senate appropriators will give some favorable support to move something like that along, because that gives us a chance to continue to have homegrown research here in South Dakota for many opportunities, not only to address potential water needs in the future on how we can be more efficient, but also to look at our current situation for agriculture, industry, and certainly we can't at all forget about the residential use, as you cited, for Rapid City's need on the Oglala Aquifer. So thank you for the question.
Just real briefly, I think that's a good answer. Real briefly, one of my real concerns about the way we practice economic development in South Dakota is that the salesmen, and I don't say that in a derogatory way, because I love salesmen and women, they make the world go around, but the salesmen come in and they all pitch their own benefits to it, and all the different entities, public entities, the counties look at how it affects their tax base, and the cities look at do they have the housing, and the, you know, and everybody looks at their own little piece, but nobody is gathering all the information to make a good decision. And the water development is an excellent example of that, or the water capabilities. And then we need a scorecard that takes all those things into account, the revenues, you know, effects on water, effects on the environment, effects on the workforce, housing. We need to evaluate all those things as we pursue or weigh economic development in South Dakota, especially for the kind of major projects you just referenced, the PowerTech out in southwest South Dakota in Hyperion, which I think is looks less feasible every day, but it would affect my neighborhood down in the southeast corner. If we get all the facts on the table and have all the proper information, many of these things would be far less controversial, and I believe legislators of both parties would have a much easier time coming together and making good decisions if all the information was available. Very seldom does that happen, where we have all that information. Unfortunately, we're just responding to salesmen's sales pitches, and that's not the way to do economic development.
Again, if there's anybody on the phone line. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Jerry, WNAX. For Jason, on the whole drainage issue that it seems to be running aground there in Pier, and, you know, what's next either for the task force or for options out there?
All right. Thank you, Jerry. And you bet. Let's look at where we're at on drainage issues, especially as the agriculture drainage looks at right now. Senate Bill 179 was brought up in the Senate Local Government Committee this week. I'm proud to say that a number of farmers made the trip to Pier, and obviously we get a little bit of snow on the ground, it gives them a chance to venture out to the state capitol. Many of those farmers were obviously concerned with the language in Senate Bill 179, which had the requirement of a professional engineer along with a wide range of information that would need to be documented in order for the 14 counties who grant drainage permits right now and in current practice. And so I think some of those farmers obviously were alarmed from the fact that it would be a change in policy that they currently have known. Some of those counties have similar questions that they ask in that document, but obviously our counties are not consistent in their permits. Some take them to a different degree. But that professional engineer language was probably the most significant. The committee did amend or plan to amend that out, or the proponents asked for that to be removed, but the bill still was defeated with very little support. I would just say on this topic of Senate Bill 179, and we look at our watershed task force as we go forward, that's a discussion that many of us will look forward to from the standpoint that how can we be more uniform or consistent amongst these counties that are out there, or whoever is the entity making the decision on drainage permits. But right now, we don't have all the counties entering into the practice of managing drainage and so or water management. So until either all the counties are on board or involved, it's pretty tough to move something forward. And that was part of my hesitation, and that's why I didn't support the 179 that came forward. But I would say as we look at meeting for a task force, which we need to get formed right after session, and it more than likely will be a new membership on the task force with some members out of the legislature and a different makeup that way. One of our first goals should be how can we move forward in these next couple of years with the task force on developing framework that we see being beneficial to not only give proper notice to the neighbors on these particular drainage projects, also to make sure we have the facts and figures on what the impacts may be, but also to do whatever we can to maintain some type of local involvement. That seems to be a strong theme out here in Pier, but also on these water issues, that if neighbors can work together and solve their problem, it's much better than bringing their issues to the court system or to any type of higher level in terms of government to be the arbitrator on those problems. So we're going to need to have that discussion on how we can you know, bring folks to the table. The ag community and the agriculture producers, I know, are very willing to engage in that dialogue, and they want to, the facts to be very clear as far as whether that water is moving over the surface in runoff or if it's going to travel filtered through the soil and enter through any type of drainage mechanism. I would also add, Jerry, to the we're going to have another discussion on should we be managing water from a more local watershed basis, or should it still happen through a county system with political boundaries. And so that will be the other discussion, not only on what should be expected and the notice, but also on who's going to be the folks deciding that. Our task force has a lot of work ahead of us. We know that drainage law is very much confusing for folks to understand, and so we need to clean that up. I'll just lastly add that Senate Bill 153 is something that I'm very proud of. That's a nonpartisan piece of legislation that we passed out of the Senate, and this is one step in the process of cleaning up some drainage law. This is a bill that I brought forth on behalf of individuals who create these local watershed districts, and we received favorable support in the Senate this week, again, from a nonpartisan basis, bipartisan anyways. And this will streamline the establishment of those local watershed districts, and the biggest component is that the landowners will be the voters in those districts, not necessarily residents. And so Senate Bill 153 is on its way over to the House, and I sure hope that they will give favorable support and move that forward, because it's not just up in the Northeast, but it's also even right around the Sioux Falls area. Folks want to form these watershed districts on a local basis. So we have big tasks in front of us, and maybe we can get started with that before we enter into the fields for spring planting season even.
So, but do you think, you know, the way things have gone over the years, authorities gone from the legislature to counties to watershed districts, and now some counties kicking at the circuit court, I mean, is there a measure of moderation in there or a consensus somewhere?
I hope we can find a little bit of harmony. As we know, it's extremely emotional, Jerry, and it's hard to have a true dialogue on where folks want to be, but that ought to be our guiding principle for this task force, is can we strike that harmony and figure out what's going to be the most comfortable for folks. It's tough, though. We can't relate where we're at here in South Dakota really to any other state. We're a unique environment here in South Dakota. What Minnesota has for water law and how they operate, especially with the strong urban involvement, is much different than here in South Dakota. But I will pose an example, though, Jerry, and something that somebody that I look to for advice or a group is the Red River Basin Commission up there, who operates out of Fargo, but they manage the Red River. The Red River is very similar to the James River, being relatively flat, slow moving, a little bit different where the Red ends up traveling right through Fargo-Moorhead, whereas the Jim River, of course, travels right alongside Aberdeen and works its way down to Mitchell and places. But, you know, we have a different component there, but the point is that they're similar type of water systems. So what can we learn from the Red River Basin Commission to look at examples on the James River, which is not limited? We have other issues, but that may be someplace we can look. I think most folks realize that we have to find that.